On this episode of Two Dudes, One Card, I sit down with Bob Kitchen for our May edition. So order up with Bob Kitchen of Maple Hill Golf on Two Dudes, One Card. All right, everybody. We've drug him back out again. The myth, dare I say legend, Mr. Bob Kitchen joins us again. Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing well, my friend. It's been a good couple weeks around Maple Hill. We had my mom got a hole in one two Tuesdays ago, right after her 74th birthday. She was born in 51, 74th birthday. And then our shipping manager, Matt Buzinski, who doesn't play golf a whole lot, isn't very good, got his first hole in one over the weekend on a guy's trip. So those were both pretty exciting.
Wow. I wish I had just one as well, but just haven't got there yet.
Keep aiming. Keep aiming for the stick, buddy.
Well, you know, it's funny. I did. I was playing with a buddy, and I think it was like 170-yard, you know, whatever, plus or minus a couple yards, par three.
Yeah.
And I hit one really great and just kind of flared it out to the left a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I said, man, I'm going to hit another one, and I hold that one.
Mm.
And there's a guy that's – the green is right by a patio. This guy ran out thinking he was getting a free drink. And I go, sorry, man. That was for birdie, actually.
Right.
It was funny.
Well, it's kind of a hole-in-one, but it's a great shot.
So, Bob, what were your thoughts on this PGA Championship, Quail Hollow in general, and the outcome?
I think we've proven time and time again that 330-yard par fours are fun. You know, whatever that hole was, it 14 or 15? 14, right, that they could drive?
Yeah.
That hole was so much fun to watch, man. Like, some guys were laying it back and hitting it in from 100 yards out, and some guys were trying to, you know, hit that little draw around the corner and, you know, bounce it up onto the green. It was a perfect risk-reward hole. And so I don't think par fours need to be 498 yards in order for them to be fun. I just had a long conversation at Maple Hill today with one of my good friends, Ricky Schiltz, about why they turned the golf course into a par 71 when it's a par 72. And it's just about, like, I don't know if you want to call it ego or whatever. They're trying to defend the golf course and make sure that the scores aren't too low. Like, what did he ended up with? What, 11?
Yeah, it was 10, 11. Yeah.
I think he wanted 11. And, you know, so had the course been a par 72 like it is, he would have ended up at 15. And I don't think that big deal. I really could care less. I can't stand it when they start moving that stuff around. That just drives me crazy. I just let it be what it is. I think people like watching birdies personally. After watching that par four getting driven time and time again and watching a couple guys hit it to a foot, right? I mean, literally, they hit it to a foot from the hole, from 330 or 320 or 308 or whatever it was playing. That's fun. I think it's great. I think it's good for the sport. And if you're going to allow that, then who cares if it's a 71 or 72? The long rough, I get it. I'm not sure it's totally necessary. I don't think people like to – I think that the powers that be – overestimate how much the public likes watching people suffer. I'm not big on watching people suffer. I get the long rough and all that, but I it's hard enough, right? I mean, it's hard enough. So I get it to a point, but I think there is a point where it starts getting ridiculous. And then Scotty, man, I was watching Sunday on my phone. I was out playing golf and I was like, he's going to lose it, man. Everybody's coming back at him. But I'll tell you what, the guy's patience and his resolve and his demeanor and all the intangibles really, really, really pay off when you get down to the end like that. I mean, those guys were all coming after him, and he kind of just stayed the course. And that's how good the guy is, man. And then he won by 4 or 5 shots or whatever it was. That's how good he is. And Bryson's so good, and Rahm is so good. I mean, those guys are phenomenal. And Bryson got beat by five strokes in the last 5 holes on Saturday. And that was basically the whole difference of the tournament. Like, Scotty was just unflappable on Saturday. And then Sunday, he just kind of stayed the course and he took his lumps and everybody threw everything they had at him. And he just doesn't pay attention, doesn't really get bothered. My hat's off to him, man. I love that.
Yeah, I think that there was a lot of people that were kind of, upset that they were doing it at Quail Hollow, just because it's a regular tour stop. And I think that Quail Hollow might have taken a little offense to that and made that, and the PGA came out there and said, "Hey, we want to make this a little bit tougher."
Yeah.
I think the surprising thing was that Scotty should really get a lot of respect for is the fact that he's the only guy on the back nine. I mean, he put his foot down on the gas. I mean, he went for the, he played the shots he needed to play if he was in trouble. Don't get me wrong. And
Yeah.
he made the wise decisions. But when he wanted to score, he was scoring, even on the green, on the mile. I mean, he was scoring. What did you think about Friday? Or no, it was Thursday, wasn't it? That there, it wasn't lift clean in place.
Oh, the mud thing.
I
Yeah,
mean,
people were talking about that for sure.
Scotty's was bad, but the way that Shane's ball looked like it just plugged on flight, I thought, man, I thought it was rough.
I think Xander had an issue with something
Yeah.
too that happened on that. My opinion on that is, Steve, is that if it's even remotely close to questionable, just let him clean it off and put it back. Like, you still get hit the shot. Like the divot thing will be argued until the end of time. Like, well, should you have to hit out of a divot? Should you have to hit out of a divot? I don't think that rule is ever going to change, because what defines a divot? Is last week's divot different than last month's divot? Yeah, they sure as hell are. Last month's divot is pretty well filled in. Last week's divot, if it wasn't replaced or sanded, which the tour of course is, but you and I are playing golf courses where last week's divot might not be sanded, might not be filled in. Well, it's going to be hard to hit out of that. Last month's divot, probably a little easier to hit out of. So what defines a divot? That is the problem. That's why they'll never change the rules in regards to divots, because how do you define a divot? So the divot thing is out. So let's go on to the muddy golf ball thing. If it's wet, and if the ball's plugging at all or getting mud on it, in my opinion, that's not part of the game. Well, you got to play it with the conditions. You got to play it where it lies, all that kind of stuff. The intention of the rules was not set up so, like, oh, you got a bad break and you have a bunch of mud on your ball because it landed over here in a low spot instead of over here in a high spot. Now you have to play. You have to learn how to play with mud on your ball. That was never the intention of the rules. So I think if it's questionable at all, let them clean it off. Let them drop it from their knee. Move on. I just think it's so simple.
Yeah, I totally agree, especially with the amount of rain they had. I mean,
Yeah.
and that turf condition, there was a reporter that brought up, like the St. Andrews, the old course, and then got taught the difference in fairways. We sand here, overseed. Over there, the conditions are harder. Even when it's wet out, the ground is still
Right.
hard. And it's
Right. Right.
pasture land that's been
It's not
stripped.
flush.
Right.
Yeah, it's an island, dude. It's an island. It's a windswept island. If you're talking about the UK and
Yeah.
Ireland, like, it's a windswept island that's rock and not much soil. And I've never been over there and played there, but we've got employees that used to, I got one employee that used to work at St. Andrews. And it's not like the United States, especially places that have good soil, like Indiana and Michigan. Like, it's just not, it's apples and oranges. So if it's the ball's plugging because you brought it in at a higher angle, or you gotta hit it in a low spot, for the love of God, let the guys clean it off and drop the ball and let's move on. Make it a non-issue if it is an issue.
What's your opinion, if you have one, on Rory skipping every media day at the US Open or at the PGA?
I don't know what the rule is for that. My opinion is their job is to golf, not to talk. So
Right.
I've never quite understood, like, how they owe it to us to sit there and talk. If they don't want to talk, they don't want to talk. If the guy's not in a good mood, or he's hitting it bad, or I don't. It doesn't bother me none. Like I don't really feel like talking today. Okay.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think it I bring it up because I just imagine the PGA Tour is going to overreact and they're going to do like they do the NFL and I think they do
Yeah,
the NBA.
make them or find them.
Yeah, that you have to come out there. Right now, how it works is if I had any kind of media credentials, I could put a request in for Rory or Ty. You could put a request in for anybody, and then they have, basically right of refusal. They can decline. I it doesn't bother me. I just think that when you're one of the stars of the PGA Tour and you just won the Masters and then you get hit with this unconforming driver and you got all this stuff coming up and you're talking about how you're going to be freewheeling now that the Masters, the Grand Slam's over, the pressure's off, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, you start having some bad rounds because I'm like, it could be a Masters hangover as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I'd probably still be reeling in the green jacket. I don't. So,
You gotta, you'd feel different about it, I'd imagine. I mean, I've never had to deal with that, but you gotta feel a little different about it. That'd be human.
I think you. I don't know that I would say he owes it, but you would think, as he's kind of a media darling or whatever, that you would that he would at least come in one day, but. I don't think it's as big a deal as people are making it.
Right. I don't, it doesn't bother me at all. Like I watch the NBA too, and I watch these media timeouts, and then they're interviewing the coach real quick, or when they bother, my team's Michigan State, and then they're bothering Tom Izzo when he's at halftime when he's trying to go in the tunnel and talk to his guys, and he has to do a 30-second interview or 45-second interview or whatever, because he's obligated contractually to talk to these guys. And and Popovich used to do all those interviews in the NBA. He was so funny. Like that just to me personally, it drives me crazy. Like these guys are just trying to do their job. They don't owe anybody anything. Just during a timeout, what in the world do you think somebody's gonna say, like in the NBA? Like, hey, how are you gonna stop LeBron James on this next play? I don't know. We're gonna try to play defense. I'm gonna go talk to my team about it right now. So that drives me crazy. And then this I just think the media is way, way overhyped, and they're all so hungry to get that bite. And I don't think it's healthy for lots of different reasons. And if Roy don't want to talk, I'm for it. Go ahead. You don't owe us anything. He's been wonderful.
Yeah, sorry if you can hear my dogs going nuts in the background. My kids just
I
walked
can't. I can't.
in. What do you I've got some questions. I've had some people ask me about this, and I thought I would bring it up to you. You know what? Before I go any further, let's talk about your new venture at Maple Hill. Is it the official name, The Hill Unscripted?
Yeah, that's my own podcast, I guess you'd call it.
Okay, so I want to make sure I'm going to link that in our description of the podcast so everybody can give it a listen. I've already listened to it. I just couldn't remember what name you. I know when I looked when it came up on the podcast, it said The Hill Unscripted, but I didn't know if you were going to make it Maple Hill or what it was going to, but.
Yeah, the Hill Unscripted is the name. And my staff kind of, I wouldn't say goaded me into it, but they kind of said, you're doing this, you need to do this. And they've certainly listened to yours because we put it in our daily newsletter. Whenever whenever we wrap this up and you send it over to me, I send it out so the staff can listen to whatever in the world you and I are talking about and the questions and all that. So we're gonna do some things similar to that. We're gonna do some things different. I'm gonna kind of tell some stories about what I've experienced in the golf world. And the first one I did was about fitting, and I'm shooting one again tomorrow that comes out Friday. And we've got a whole list of different topics and stuff, and we're going to go off of customer questions and that kind of thing too. And I've had so much fun with you, Steve, and I think it'll have nothing to do with what you're doing down there in Indiana versus what we're doing up here in Michigan, but it'll be good. It'll be good for Maple Hill to have its own thing. A lot of our competitors, big retailers, are doing similar stuff, and we're going to kind of talk about all sorts of different golf topics and subjects and questions. And then the last 5 minutes, I'm going to do what's called the Maple Spill. And that's going to be like the latest and greatest what's happening at Maple Hill, or our Father's Day sale that's coming up and all that stuff that we just finalized last week. So.
Well, the reason I wanted to promote that for you anyway, but the reason I was bringing this up, I've received a couple of these are not really questions. It's a statement that Could Maple Hill do testing and create a hot list? So of equipment that's out, and I thought, hey, what a great idea. And a lot of them have just reiterated that, you know, we like Bob's honesty. You know, there's always these rumors around, like, my golf spy gets paid for
no
who's
question.
on there.
Yeah, there's yeah, a lot of there's a lot of there's, it's yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. So the answer to that question or statement or whatever, yes, we could. It would probably come across biased no matter what. And I think how my golf spy started was really, really clean and good. And I think that's how Golf Digest started. And I think that's how everybody started. Like we've talked about before with Golf Digest, I'll pick on them for a second. How bad do you want to write anything negative about Titleist after they're paying you, you know, 10 to 20 million? I don't even know, a ton of money for all those advertisements they put in your magazine every single month and on your website and all the different things. So how much negative publicity do you want to give Titleist after they're paying all your bills? And then you're going to say, oh yeah, the new Pro V1 sucks, which it doesn't. I'm just saying, like, why in God's green earth would you print that or put or type that or put that in your website? So it's tough, and my golf spy is tough. Like, they got so popular so quick that some of it I think is pretty just dead honest, but a lot of it you kind of got to scratch your head, like, I don't know, because it's kind of always the same usual suspects, and they're all certainly pushing the envelope and pushing each other, and but like. Before those reviews even come out, I could guess what they're going to say before they even come out. And then, boom, that's exactly what I would have.
Yeah,
I was guessing.
I think that's the problem. And it's not. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it is exactly what it's supposed to be, just because, you know, the equipment, you know, the manufacturer. It's, you know, a lot of times it's already all over the internet that, oh, this driver's better, hotter than this one or whatever.
Of course, yeah.
But what you don't see, and what I think people want to see, is somebody go, you know what, this thing just doesn't work, or this isn't
right.
What they say. They just want somebody that's going to say that at the same time,
yeah.
Or say that, you know, this product, I would give, you know, recommend this to such and such and stuff
yeah.
like that. Because I said, I'm sure. And my response to them was, I'm sure they would do it, but in the end, why don't you just go up to your local store and hit the clubs? Because even if it's an off brand and you hit it well, I mean, what's okay?
Hallelujah! Yeah. Don't buy social media driven brands. I'll never promote those because they're not good for anybody. Nobody needs to buy Tacoma irons. Just. Dude, there's a lot of options that are really good. Those are, you're just buying, like, just, you don't need to do that. We have lots of deals. Just, please, God, don't buy social media driven brands, because there's what it is and what they say it is. They're not the same. They're marketing companies, and they're really, really good at marketing. They're spending a ton of money to get you to buy those irons for $700, whatever it is. So there's always that. Then you've got if you're anywhere near a store, go hit them. And I also love when people say, I'm going to do my research tonight. I'm like, well, and people live in weird areas where they don't have a place they can go hit them, or they don't have a good, honest fitter or something like that. Like, I feel for those people, and I don't really know what the solution is. I guess the only solution there is do your research, I suppose. But, reviews are written by AI now. They used to hire other college kids. Like, there's so much hocus pocus BS going on, man. And like, does Wilson really make a bad driver? Why doesn't it sell as well as Callaway? Mainly because it's Wilson. You know, it's not because it's worse. It's a great golf club. They do so much R&D. Like, back in the day, I think they just kind of made something and sent it out there and were like, I hope this sells. You know, they like the way back with the Great Big Bertha and the Biggest Big Bertha. Like, that was just name recognition. The thing was huge. The club was $400 or $500. And, you know, it has to be better, right? It costs twice as much. Well, who knows? Nowadays, they're testing drivers before they even have a head. Like, they're building it on a computer, and they're testing the performance of the golf club before there's even a head made before they even have a prototype. Because they can do that now with the computer programs that they have. It's beyond description how good it is. So, and if you go out and play 10 rounds of golf with, I'll just say Callaway Elite, the TaylorMade QI35, and the Cobra Adapt. If you go play 10 rounds of golf with all three of those, so play 30 rounds of golf, I don't think your score is going to be one shot different. It'd be my guess is you'll be within one shot if you score average. As long as they're all the same loft, flex, and similar model, they all make the same models or models that map onto each other. I just don't believe that, like, there is a magic wand that's just gonna all of a sudden lower your score 6 strokes or 1 stroke or 2 strokes. That doesn't happen. So as long as you're playing the right thing and you got the right loft and flex, we've gone over all that stuff in your previous podcasts. Everybody needs an extra stiff, and no, you don't. Just you need to worry about results, not statistics. So
What do
it's
you think?
not as easy as it sounds. That's my answer.
I know that for sure. What are maybe 3 to 5 questions you would recommend a person be able to answer before purchasing clubs or new clubs? Could be their first set or new clubs.
One question they should answer or be able to answer is, what do you currently use? So you ask somebody that and they go, I have a set of is it TaylorMade's or is it Cobras? I'm not really sure what I have. Like, okay, well, it's kind of hard to know where you're going unless you know where you've been. And then you go, well, what do you like about them? What don't you like about them? When you're 150 yards out, what club do you hit? Is your miss hit right or left? What kind of grips do you have? And if they don't know any of that, I just tell them, bring your 7 iron along for your fitting and let's just compare it to yours and let's get a baseline and away we go. Some people are coming off of junk, like literally garage sale crap, and some people are coming off of something that's only 2 years old and it's pretty good. So it's a wide range, but knowing the past certainly helps navigate the future. I think that's a fair statement for a lot of different things, not just golf. So that really helps. And it's amazing how many people have no idea what they're using. It's just amazing.
I bet that you can't count the number of times that you've heard somebody go, well, right now I'm playing my grandpa's clubs or possibly my dad's clubs because he's like, I'm gonna give you my clubs so I can go get new clubs.
Hand-me-downs. Yeah, I got my, I got some
I hear that a lot.
hand-me-downs. But you got to start somewhere. I mean, I don't have a issue with that at all. That's fine. I think it's wonderful. If you're just going to get started and you're just going to literally be swinging, even if you're 6'4", just if you just got your buddy's clubs, your dad's clubs, and he's only 5'10", just go hit them. It's okay. Flex your knees more, bend over a little more. Even though you need plus one, it's all right. You just go play. If you're hitting them good, let it be. I don't know if I ever told you this story or not, but in the year 2000, Maple Hill won a big award with Ping, and we were the fitter of the blah 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 whatever. I don't even know what it was. There was like 12 of us nationwide, and we all got flown to Phoenix to their headquarters, and we got to tour all the factories, and we got to go through their fitting. And I went through their fitting, and I needed Ping i3 blades, green dot, plus a half an inch, and it was like JZ steel stiff, whatever. I can't remember what it was, and I took and I was playing i2 coppers, red dot, standard length, textured spiral wraps. I still have that set, as a matter of fact. I love that set of irons. Back then I did. So I got this whole thing and I got fitted for a driver, and they gave you all this stuff for free. And then you come home and then they ship it all to your work. And I was so excited. It was the worst set of irons I ever had in my life. I literally couldn't hit those things. I ever tell you this story? I don't think I did. I
I
couldn't hit those things
don't
to save my life. Back then, I played a real strong hook and green dots 2 degrees upright, and I hooked the holy hell out of those irons. It was indescribable how much I could turn those things from right to left because the offset was more than I was used to, and the lie angle was more upright. So the heel was digging, face was shut, and ball was going left, and the shaft was softer. So this was back when I was strong. This was back in my maybe mid 20s, 20 years ago. the 25 years ago, I guess, early 20s. Played good. I was a really good golfer at that time. So I ended up selling them to my buddy who's like 6'4" and real upright, and he had them for he honestly might still have them. He had them for like 15 years though. They were perfect for him. So even though my fitting was that, results trumps fitting, right? Like you have to make the club perform, and like all, I was just used to standard length. It changed my whole posture. I hated the upright. I just hated those irons, and that was after going to Ping and getting fitted by the geniuses of the geniuses that run the golf fitting world. Because that's what the robot said, and that's what the lie board said, but they didn't really ask me the questions about, well, what is happening with your current clubs? What don't you like? And I liked everything I had. So then they just go, okay, we're just going to fit you off what you need and then put you on lie board. And it was terrible. So you have to a little input from the consumer. I wasn't really a consumer, but I guess I was kind of playing the role of the consumer. Is very helpful, man. You gotta know, like, what do you like? What don't you like? What's happening?
What are, well, it's a, when is it time for new wedges? What signs do you think somebody looks for to
That's a
when they
big
know that they need to probably replace their wedges?
one. Well, they're not spinning like they used to. I love that one. Okay. You got to have some pretty noticeable wear on the grooves of the club, like where they're actually getting vertical lines coming off the grooves where it's kind of starting to wear down. Well, can you sharpen your grooves? Nope, you sure can't. Whatever anybody tells you, you can't.
Yeah,
Don't think you can, because you
do not
can't.
buy that tool, those tools off Amazon.
Right?
Start
It
running them in
does
your.
not work. We sell it too. It doesn't work. It cleans your grooves. It doesn't sharpen your grooves. And if it sharpens them, it sharpens them for one swing, and then it's right back to normal. Because truthfully, in order to get the groove sharp, you need to add metal to the face, and that's not going to happen. So you can file it down, but. And we've talked about this before. A wedge with no grooves at all spins the ball more than a wedge with grooves. That's off of a board or off of a mat. Off of real life grass, you have to have grooves because that's what gets the grass out of the way so the ball can contact the face. So people think that grooves is what creates spin. It's not. Grooves equals surface contact, but surface contact is what creates spin. People that play a lot, if you play a lot or practice a lot or both, I would say 2 years is about all you can get out of them. I really would. Now, you get a guy that just wants to change, like, I don't know, probably 5, 6, 7 years, to be dead honest. Like, they last a lot longer than people's patience do. People, they get fed up with them and they just want something new. You know, I got SM9s. You know, the SM10s came out. I want to get the SM10s. Okay, fine. And is it going to spin a little more? Yeah, it probably spins a little more. Of course, fresh, brand new wedges every single round, which is going to be your maximum spin because they're perfect still. They don't wear and tear on them. But I think the pros maybe switch one time a year. I think some of them might switch 2 times a year, but and that's hitting a billion range balls and golfing for a living. So I think the guys that do it every year, thank you for your business. Everybody else, 2 years to 5 years is probably pretty reasonable.
Is the I don't know if you ever heard this. Have you heard about the fingernail test on wedges? Where
I've heard of it.
if you take your thumbnail or fingernail and you run it down the wedge and your nail does not catch, they say that's time to change out your wedges. Seems reasonable, but
That's probably it's kind of like the quarter test on the tires, on the
right.
treads of your tires. Treads of your tires. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I don't know. It's if you know what you're looking at all, like it's pretty obvious when you're looking at the face of the wedge if it's had it or not. And if you see like where the metal's changing color and it's got a big rust circle, it's done. Stop using
Yeah.
it. Like we do see that too, Steve. And you even see good players. Like, I just love this wedge. I just know how it's going to perform. Okay, if it's still working, let it be. But other than that, if it's got that actual wear where you're into the actual metal and all the chrome, all the plating is all worn off, it's at it. It's had it. Hang it up.
What do you think is the most misunderstood thing about golf clubs?
I think that one of the most misunderstood things is that price equals performance. That's not true. The more expensive golf clubs don't work better, don't make you better. You can buy a really good driver for $249 and hit it better than a $650 driver, and people want to believe that the newest, latest, greatest is the absolute cure to everything, and like, it might be better. It depends on what you're doing, and the no, in that particular case, if you're on a launch monitor, the statistics ain't gonna lie to you. If it's going further, it's going further. If the ball speeds up, it's better. But that drives me crazy. The shaft thing, it drives me crazy. Like, I don't know. You don't need a $350 driver shaft, and if you have 120 gram Moda shafts, 120 gram Dynamic Gold shafts, 120 gram KBS shafts, they're gonna perform pretty similar. It's a 120 gram steel shaft. You can't do a ton with it. It's made out of steel. Stop thinking it's the shaft. It's not. It's your swing. Wedge shafts. People always what shafts in that wedge? What shafts in that wedge? Wedge shafts don't mean much at all. We tested a whole bunch of wedges. Doesn't matter. Wedge shafts. They're just so short. Just doesn't mean basically diddly squat. Loft is very important. And then I had a guy today. Well, my 5 iron is 21 degrees, and I want to get a 7 wood to replace it. And I'm like, well, 7 wood's 21 degrees, 5 iron's 21 degrees, but I can bet you everything I own, a 7 wood goes way further than a 5 iron. Those are not the same club. Well, yeah, but they're both 21 degrees. I'm like, yeah, but that distance isn't just loft. It's
Right.
mass plus speed. Like, oh God. Anyhow, I'll keep fighting that fight for the rest of my life, I think, Steve. It's like I'm fighting the war on drugs. It can't be won, but we got to keep fighting it, right? We can't just let everything go to hell. So I keep on battling it, like, and then set, like, well, I'm gonna change the loft to my 6 iron because I'm doing a combo set, and the lofts are wrong. And I'm like, I wouldn't say so. The center of gravity is lower on ZX5s than it is ZX7s. It's ZX5 and ZX7. If they're the exact same lofts, ZX5 goes higher, and ZX4 goes higher yet because the CG is lower on a full swing shot. Because you're impacting CG, which impacts spin, which creates lift. It's too hard to tell everybody everything all the time, Stevie. But so I bang my head against the wall. Sometimes I wish I knew less than what I know, to be honest. I think it'd be better to live in just being oblivious than actually knowing this stuff and going through all the fitting classes and listening to all my fitters. It's dangerous when you really truly know a lot, and you're talking to people who think they know a lot, and it's tough, but we just do the best we can and keep moving forward. That's all there is to it.
Long irons, hybrids, or woods recommendations for a high handicap, a new player. Kind of
Great
goes
question.
back to what you're talking about, the 5 iron. If
Yeah.
you had somebody that was obviously a high handicap, that's a new player, but would you try to put them in like their long irons be hybrids and then go into the
Yeah.
woods from there, as opposed to saying, hey, hit this 4 iron, it'd be easier just hit this 4 hybrid.
Yeah. I like that one. That's a good question. I really like that question. So the way when I'm waiting on somebody and I'm talking to them about buying irons or combo set or whatever they're going to do, I always say, now what's the longest iron you're comfortable hitting? And they look at me and I say, well, if you pull a 6 iron out of your bag, do you feel pretty good about it? They're like, yeah. I'm like, what do you think your odds are of hitting that 6 iron pretty good? They're like, probably 70, 80%. I'm like, okay, that's good. Like, now you have to pull a 5 iron out of your bag. What do you think about that? They're like, not as good. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's normal. It's longer, less loft. What do you think your odds are? Like, probably 30 to 40%. I'm like, okay, then we should probably stop your irons at a six, and let's try to move you into a five hybrid to get you a little bit more height. And hybrids have to go straighter because they have bulge and roll to the face. Irons are flat, so our hybrids have to go straighter. They don't have a choice. And then a four hybrid. Okay, so now I say, okay, do you like your three wood? I don't really get it in the air that high. Okay, then let's maybe go to a three high launch or four wood or five wood. And then, have you ever hit a seven wood? Nope, I've never had a seven wood. Okay, well, do you like hybrids better or do you like fairway woods better? And then you either try to build down from the wood or up from the iron slash hybrids. And then you try to have that gapping make sense to help that guy. And I try not to sell them too many long clubs. First off, they're expensive. You know, woods are expensive versus wedges or hybrids. They're all more expensive than wedges for the most part. And second off, like the game is won, the scoring is done around the green. So just having them with a whole bunch of, you know, five different fairway woods slash hybrids is maybe overload for them. They probably don't need that. That might be too much. So we even had a fitting today that this guy messaged me, and he got fit in Detroit at one of our competitors. I'm selling the clubs. My price was way lower, but he got driver five wood, 357 hybrid, and then 8-9 pitching wedge and sand wedge. I was like, you know what? I don't totally hate this fitting. Like the guy's real, he's buying QIs and he's spending a lot of money, but I'm like, you know, for a relatively beginner to golf, that's probably a good idea. Get him a driver to five wood, 357 hybrid. So he's going to have a good 20. If he's remotely close to decent, he's going to have a 20-yard gap, maybe 25-yard gap from each hybrid to the next. And then he's got 8-9 pitch and sand for his scoring clubs, you know, 150 or 140 in hand or whatever, how far he hits them. It's weird, but I didn't hate it. I could see what the fitter was trying to do, and I was like, this is all right. I don't mind, you know, because sometimes I have to speak up, like, hey dude, you're buying a three iron and a three hybrid or four iron and a four hybrid. Like, I don't think you need that. This fitter doesn't know what they're doing, or they're just trying to milk your money or something. Like, you don't need that. But this one made some sense to me, and I was like, okay. I've never seen that before, but I get it. I understand why they did it. Let's go with it.
It's a
So
lot of head covers. Whew.
yeah, it's a lot of head covers. Exactly. He's got a forest of head covers in his bag, but I have a forest of head covers in my bag.
Now
Ugh.
we get to some a little different question.
Fire.
What does Bob do if someone hits into his group?
Oh. Generally speaking, nothing. I've done it. I've been young before. I've been dumb before. I've made plenty of mistakes. I'm very patient. I'm very forgiving. If they do it twice, I might say, hey guys, like we're not going anywhere. Like I'd imagine this would be a scenario where the golf course is packed. They're like, we're not going anywhere, dude. So like just relax. It's enjoy the day. We're enjoying our day. Please stop hitting into us. Make sure we're gone. That would be about as far as I'd go. I don't think it needs to go any further than that. But
No, I think that's 97% for the, well, it's probably a lot less than that, actually, given some interactions I've had on a golf course.
yeah, people lose their mind.
Yeah, most of the time it's the same way. I did have a little thing on Sunday. A guy not anywhere on a total different hole didn't yell four, hits the ball, and I don't know why, but I had slowed down the golf cart, was talking to my Cartner, and the ball almost it bounced and went through the windshield at an angle right past me, right down and into the trap on the hole we were playing. And generally, I would do the same thing, but I wouldn't say anything. But when the guys rolled up there, got their ball, not one word was said about going headhunting. And I'm like, hey, I'm like, yeah, we accept your apology. And he just kind of looked at me like, you almost killed me, honestly. You could have been
Right.
bad, but
Well,
no,
that's funny because, yeah,
I
go
threw
ahead.
that in there because of that.
Well, last last Thursday. As a matter of fact, I didn't even think about it until you just said that. Last Thursday, we were playing Railside with my league partner, Matt. And Matt's the guy, I love Matt. He's my favorite. Matt's the guy, though, that if people are driving fast down his side street, he throws a tennis ball at their car. So just to bounce it off there and just say, "Hey, slow down." You know, he's the rules guy, right? And I love Smitty. If you met him, someday, Stevie, you will meet him. And he's the coolest guy ever. But he knows right from wrong, and he kind of holds everybody to the rules a little bit, which is good. I'm for that. I'm not saying anything's wrong, but he gets fiery. So he's standing on the tee on 18. 17 comes this way towards me. 18 goes kind of on a diagonal back, probably like a 60-degree angle, like to the left. So it's not quite a 90-degree angle, but it's pretty far out of the way to the right. But if somebody blocks one or hits a cut, it's possible to hit it over there. Well, they did. So I'm sitting there in the cart, and we're waiting. It's league, right? So it's slow. So he's on the tee. I'm sitting in the cart 20 feet from him, 15 feet from him. On the fly, the ball hits the front corner of our cart, bounces off the front, and so I missed my leg by a foot and a half. Bounces off the cart, goes into the pine tree, and then bounces into the rough right between our cart and the hole that the ball was hit from, 17. And he was like, "What was that?" I said, "That was the group behind us. They just hit the cart on the fly." He's like, "That's bullshit, man. That's what." And I'm like, "Smitty, it's fine." He's like, "No, they should at least be yelling four. Did you hear him yell four?" I'm like, "I don't know. We got music playing." He plays the music pretty quiet. It's not like it was blaring. I was like, "I didn't hear a word, though. I really didn't." He's like, "That's bullshit. I'm saying something to him." I was like, "I don't care, dude. If you want to say something, go ahead. I've hit one to the right before. They might not even know he hit it that hard. I have no idea. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt." Well, they came over there, and he's like, "You hit our cart, dude." And they were like, "Oh, really? We're sorry." Like, kind of turned it into something. They shouldn't have done it. He got fired up about it because they almost hit me. And I was like, "I don't care, but if you want to say something, go ahead." So it ended fine. But like, you're in the league. Just yell four. Give everybody a heads up. That's all.
Yeah, it's always now. There's been times I've hit a wayward one, and I was getting ready to yell four, but I was if the people were driving in their cart, and I thought, man, I'm afraid if I yell four, they're gonna stop, and I knew I would hit them, so I didn't yell anything, and it went behind them, and I still drove over there, and the guy got mad that I didn't yell four. I said, "Man, if I would have yelled four and you guys would have hesitated, I'd have drilled you in the forehead. I mean, it was coming right at you, and you guys are moving. I didn't want to say anything." And I said, "I think I made the right decision." And he was like, "You might be right. It was just a little shocking. They were cool about it, but it's like you got to make that decision right off the bat."
Yeah, it's situational for sure. And then one of my favorite jokes of all time, my buddy Chad, he's like, "I don't yell four until I see who it's gonna hit." Obviously a joke, but Chad's one of the funniest people I've ever met. And that's what he was saying, that like during one of our employee tournaments, where it was all friends out on the course. He's like, "I'm not yelling four if it's gonna hit that guy. I want him to get hit." Just funnier now, but yeah, that's how I'd handle that.
What's Bob's superpower on the golf course?
Boy, oh boy, I think other people would say coaching or course management. I have a handful of guys that, and this is going to sound a little more bragging than I'd like it to, but I have a handful of guys that love playing with me because I can help them out as far as like where they should hit it and what club they should hit, and like just figuring out like how to do it and what to do it, and help them out with reading greens and that kind of thing. Like, if they're sitting in the side hill rough and they're like, "Hey, dude, should I hit a 3 hybrid or an 8 iron?" I'm like, "Well, you're 270 yards out. You're not going to reach it. So it's going to be two swings no matter what. So if it's going to take you two swings, what do you think you should do?" And they'll be like, "Oh, I'll just hit the 8 iron, then I'll get it out, and then I can flip a wedge on." I'm like, "Yep, you got to take your medicine sometimes, dude. Like, trying to hit the hero shot when it's going to take you two swings no matter what doesn't make any sense to me." Just like, "Oh, yeah, that does make sense." So My buddy, Big Kirk Quaker, one of my favorite guys. He's like, I love playing with you, dude. You knocked me like 4, 5, 6 strokes off my game and helped me out with my putting and give me something good to think about. And I try to be as reassuring as possible and as cheering as possible, like, cheer him on and all that, and try to keep him as positive as possible. Brush off the last shot. We ain't hitting that one again. Now we're hitting this one. Let's think about this one. So I think that would be, and I like to think I'm pretty fun to play with. My groups always have a good time. We have a lot of laughs. I'll joke around with guys and kind of, needle them a little bit here and there. And it's not, I, you know, it it's not as serious as everybody wants to make it out to be. Like, I'm not trying to do this for a living. I'm just trying to sell golf clubs for a living.
Right.
So it's thank God I'm not good. I don't have to golf for a living. I'd be broke.
Well, that's a good segue into this next question. What are your thoughts on unsolicited golf advice by someone in your group?
Oh yeah, that's a good point. I think you got to know the source first and foremost. Like, I was playing with my buddy Rocky yesterday, played up at Pilgrim's Run, beautiful golf course, and he kept on pushing it and pushing it and pushing it, and he's pulling the club back straight inside, and his swing path is so inside to out, which is good, but it's way too inside to out. And I was like, dude, will you please pull that golf club back straighter? Because he was getting so frustrated. And I said, can you please make your takeaway straighter so that that golf club can get on plane and get it back to the center? And he started doing that, and he started doing way better. And I was like, I'll shut up if you don't want me to say anything else, but you've been mad the last 6 tee shots, and I can't watch it anymore. And he's like, no, dude, if you see something, go ahead and say something. I'm like, all right, if you don't mind. Rocky and I have played golf for 30 years together, so I can say something to him whenever. And then Pat yesterday, my other buddy, Lefty, he was having a little bit of a hard time with his driver. And I was like, dude, can you please fire your hands? Your hands are so late. Get those hands moving. And then bang, he started hammering a couple drives and hitting some really good shots. He's been taking lessons from a friend of mine, so I know a little bit about what's going on there. And other than that, like, I just sit there and watch him fail. And but I have a hard time, me personally, I have a hard time knowing I can help the guy and not saying anything is really, really difficult for me because I want to see my friends do good. If it's a total stranger and I know what he's doing wrong, I'll sit there and just mum's the word. You don't know me, I don't know you. It's probably going to sound weird. I'm not going to say anything. Just enjoy your round. I hope you're having fun. So I think it's definitely a fine line, and you got to know the guy, and you got to know. They got to know the source. There's a lot that in play there, is the way I would word it.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. I've had friends do it before, and I know I've done it before. I do have a funny story though. I was playing with some friends, and I'm looking at this putt. I'm playing pretty well. Everybody's behind me. I'm gonna be taking a little bit of money, and my one buddy goes, I hit in there, and he's like, looks at my other two partners, and he's like, should probably just let him have that. That putt left edge all day. He ain't missing that. Now the problem was I was reading it right edge.
Oh.
So I putt it left edge and completely miss it. And I go, I thought
Oh.
you said this was left edge. He goes, I'm not the one putting that ball. Why would you listen to me?
That's funny.
I said, oh man, that worked. You got in my head. I was like, gosh, dang, I swear this is the right edge, but
Yeah, I did play with my dad last week, and my dad's had some putting issues over the years, and he was de-selling his putts. He always talks about pull it back short and accelerate into the ball. And he was pulling it back long and decelerating into it. I was like, Dad, you're not practicing what you preach. And he looks at me and goes, what? And I said, you always talk about a short backstroke and accelerate into it. I've seen you de-sell the last 4 greens in a row. You've got like 3 putts and a 4 putt already today. Like, me and my dad's 75, and he's got some health issues, but he still gets it around the course. His contact and his striking is really good. He's got good hands for chipping. And he gets out there and he's de-selling putts left and right. And I'm like, can you please just accelerate into a putt before I go crazy? I said, I just can't watch it anymore. And he kind of got a laugh out of it. And I said, I'm half kidding and I'm half serious, Dad. Like, seriously. Then he started accelerating into a few, and he actually knocked a few in. And I was like, well, that's just your own advice coming back to you. It's nothing you haven't told me 50 times in my life. So you can be mad at me all you want. I learned it from you. So,
Yeah, that's your line. I'm just
yeah,
regurgitating.
exactly. You're the golf bro. You're the guy I learned golf from. So, what do you want me to do? I'm just telling you what you told me.
So the last question I have is, what's your top three most irritating golf etiquette abuses that you see on the golf course?
Oh, I don't get too irritated. I don't let them irritate me. The shadow thing can drive you nuts. If you're playing with somebody who doesn't know where their shadow is on the green and they're kind of walking all over or whatever, like that could drive you crazy. Somebody who's not being quiet while you're trying to hit. I don't, if music's playing, music's playing. Song's in, going, fine. But if a guy is fiddling with something or screwing around with something or jingling his coins in his pocket or anything like that, like I don't need it dead quiet while I'm hitting. I don't even care. If you're walking, just keep walking. I don't care if you're walking, just keep walking. Just the start, stop, or anything that's just out of
Right.
rhythm, that can drive you nuts. The shadow can drive you nuts. It's I don't know, it's just kind of rude. Oh, and then the other one. Oh, this is a classic. I have a couple friends that do this, and maybe some of them are listening. Maybe some of them will learn something. But you and I are riding in a golf cart, and we both tee off, and I drive straight to my ball. And then the second hole, I drive straight to my ball. And the third hole, I drive straight to my ball. And I'm like, oh, where did you hit, Steve? Like, oh, you're back there? Oh, okay. We'll go back and hit yours in just a minute. Like, you drive to the one that's closest to you, right? Is what you should
Yeah.
do. Yeah. And my one buddy said, I was like, hey, dude, this is, we're on number 18. And I said, hey, he always drives straight to his ball, doesn't he? And my buddy looks at me and he goes, it's the only sure thing out here. And I said, that's one of the funniest lines I've ever heard in my life.
I
Like,
normally drive to the hardest one to find. That's
do
where I
you?
go first, so I give somebody
Yeah.
a break. Could be me. Hell, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that is yours, but you're supposed to drive to the one closest to you so they can keep hitting and moving. So like if my partner hits it in the middle and I hit it further up but in the weeds, I'll drive to his, park the cart, and then I'll walk over and start looking for mine in the weeds. Because he needs to hit first because we need to keep this damn thing moving, you know. Like that day I did play with my dad. We played a foursome. We had a really good player with us, a pretty good player with us, and then my dad and I, who are both all right, but far from great. Like we're both past our prime, and we played it in like 3 hours and 25 minutes. Stopped at the turn and got some drinks. You know, looked for balls when we had to look for balls, and we still played it in three, you know, under 3:30. And so if you're just somebody's hitting and somebody's moving, like why golf takes so long, I have no idea. People are just clueless and they don't know to keep it moving. Like somebody should be hitting at all points in time. And then I went and played the other course, Stony Brook down the street. Four guys pushing push carts. Okay, no problem with that. You guys want to push your carts? Go ahead. I love that. Good for the exercise. Maybe it's price. I don't care. Go and get your exercise. Have fun. Save the cart fees. I'm good with that. Now, when they're in the group ahead of us, they're a hole and a half behind, and all four of them are going to this ball, and then all four of them are going over to that ball, and then all four of them are going to that ball. Like, dude. Have you guys ever golfed before? Like, it just drives you crazy. Play ready golf, have a little bit of a clue what's going on. Like, holy moly. Oh, that I guess that might be my biggest pet peeve. I have patience in life. I don't have patience on the golf course like I should. But it's not, I don't even know if it's patience. It's just do what you're supposed to do. Just keep it moving. I don't know. I don't know a great way, you know, if that's patience or just I'm too easily annoyed or I'm just annoyed by people not doing what they should. I don't
Well,
know.
it's because it's a persistent problem. It goes on at every golf
Yeah.
course.
Yeah.
We're paying higher prices. Yet I expect when the price goes up, there at least be a little bit better. So have a ranger out there, not just a guy driving around going, "Hey, how's your day going?" But one that's
Yeah. Yeah.
actually going, "You guys need to pick it up a little bit. You
Yeah.
need to play ready golf," because normally that's what they all say, just play ready golf. And
Yeah.
I do the same thing. If If I'm the shortest, I drive over to my ball. I grab my club. I say, "Hey, man, just take the cart, and I'll walk over there after I hit, and move on." And you always keep it moving. And I mean, I understand there's going to be days where it's cart path only, and that's really going to slow things up. But
I would, if I was a starter ranger at a golf course, I think there's such a pleasant way to approach it. And I think you can even make it fun and funny for the guys. And on the first tee, you can say, "Hey guys, you know what? Our number one goal here is that you guys have fun and enjoy yourselves and come back, because you're our only source of income. You are our source of income. What we charge you is how I get paid." You know, you can word that however you want. Then I'd say, number two, your job as the customer here, and for make sure everyone out here is having fun, keep up with the group ahead of you. If you cannot keep up with the group ahead of you, we will either move you up to keep up with the group ahead of you, or we will find a group that's faster than you, let them play through, and let them keep up the group ahead of you so that you can play at your pace and let people play through you. But first and foremost, if you can please do me a favor, keep an eye on the group ahead of you and stay up with them. Like, if people just worded it that way, I think you'd have a way better chance. So many people are so arrogant or stupid or a combination that they just don't even listen to the starter, like, at all. And the starter lines are always kind of the same old, boring, redundant, fix your ball marks, rake the bunkers. Okay.
right.
Like, nobody knows how to do that. Like, of course, sir. And that should go without saying. What should go with saying is, we're here to make sure you have fun. That's my job. Number two, please keep up with the group ahead of you, because, that's your job. I mean, there's just other people on planet Earth, and for you to just act like it's your own private golf course, no, you got to keep it moving, bud. You have to keep it moving.
I played around not too long ago, and we were a foursome, and there was a twosome in front of us, and the twosome was in a cart, and I mean, we were on them all day. We picked up a fifth to end the round because we're trying to get the sun's going down, and it was like the 14th hole, and one of the guys hit up there. They were walking off the green, just stepping off the green, and the ball lands up there, and the guy's like, "Hey, we're still here." And we're like, "That's the problem. We'd like to be able to see the green. We're running out of daylight, and you guys are, I mean, get with it." And then, well, wouldn't you know, they stepped it up a little bit after that. I'm like,
Yeah, exactly.
"You're a twosome, and we're playing as a five.
Sometimes
Jeez."
people don't know they're doing it. Well, most times you learn that you're doing something wrong. You didn't know you're doing something wrong until someone pointed out you're doing something wrong, right? That's kind of the way life works. Whether you learn that at age 2, 5, 15, 25, 45, doesn't really matter what it is, but you don't know you're doing anything wrong until somebody says you're doing something wrong. So that if a starter's out there and he can explain that on the first tee, you go, "Oh, yeah, that's right. There is more than just me on planet Earth, and I do need to be." The one guy worded it beautifully yesterday. I played in an outing, and the guy said, "We want you to rake the traps and fix the marks on the greens so that the people tomorrow can enjoy the course as much as you did today." And I was like, that's an interesting way to word it. It's pretty accurate. Like, you want to go out there and enjoy the course? You want a beautiful golf course? Guess what? So does the guys tomorrow. So be cognitive of that, please.
Yep, that's the whole thing, is to realize it's everybody else is playing on the same playground you're
That's
playing on.
it. It's a team sport. It's an individual team sport. We're all trying to go out there and take good care of. We're all out there because we love the beauty of it and the camaraderie of it. Golf's just such a beautiful sport. So let's just take care of it, and it takes care of us, right? Even
Yep.
if it is frustrating at times, it's still nothing quite like it, man. When you flush a drive right down the middle, or hit a perfect iron, or chip in, or whatever, like, it's great.
That's for sure. It's one of the most rewarding games I played and the most frustrating at the same time.
Yeah, both ends. Exactly right.
Well, Bob, I appreciate your time as always. Make sure everybody goes and checks out the Hill Unscripted, like and follow. As man,
Thank you.
I really appreciate you coming on, and I'm always looking forward to our conversations. I was thinking tonight, man, it seems like it's been 3 months since I talked to Bob.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the date, but it seems like, well, plus the stuff going on, but man, it has seemed like a long time.
What, when was the last one? Was it a month ago or no?
It's about a month ago on the dot, but I'm like, it just seems like it's been a lot longer than a month.
Well, thank you, buddy. Thank you. I always enjoy coming on here and always talking with you. And you always got great questions. You get them from, I know some are from you and some are from the audience, but it's certainly fun. And I, you know what, Stevie, I went for a long walk before we did the Maple Hill podcast, and I walked 3 miles and put the headphones on, and I put on a few of the main golf podcasts, like not you know, like the big brands that spend a lot of
Right.
money, get a lot of, you know, real productions and all that kind of stuff. That I gotta be dead ass honest, Stevie, I was pretty bored with them. I was like, these guys just aren't that interesting to listen to. Their subjects aren't very good. I don't know, maybe I'm a different, maybe I'm not the target audience, but I certainly love the sport of golf, and I love the game of golf, and the whole industry business aspect of it too. And it just wasn't keeping my attention. I was like, this is just kind of bland and boring. So I appreciate what you're doing, and I'm kind of semi going to base what I'm doing off of a little bit like what you and I do, but it'll be a little different too, of course, because that'll be the Maple Hill spin to it, and a lot more Maple Hill stories, and the actual stuff that's happened at Maple Hill, and the interactions I've had, and all the wonderful people I've met, like all, and then I'll have interviews and stuff with my staff and my parents and my brother and all that on there eventually too. So I'm looking forward to it, and thanks for the little plug on that. And I guess until next time, my friend, I appreciate you. Thank you.
Yep, you too, and you have a good evening.
All right, buddy.